Welcome to our very last episode of our five-part Visionary Club special series recorded live during the IAA conference at IAA Mobility 2025 and brought to you exclusively for our podcast listeners. In this episode, Stephanie Mai, Director at Women Automotive Network, Mandy Bübinger, Managing Director Czech Republic and Slovakia at Renault Trucks, Sabine Scheunert, Managing Director Central Europe at Dassault Systems, and Tanja Kassal, Chief Cybersecurity Governance Engineer at CARIAD, are talking about how to attract and retain top talents in automotive. Sit back and enjoy.
Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to this panel discussion on future-proofing the workforce. We're not quite sure what that means with the industry going through so many changes right now, but we've got amazing panelists here to share their expertise. Firstly, I just want to thank you all for coming and thank the IAA for this amazing collaboration. It's where the automotive industry is going right now, you know, partnerships, collaboration. We've got to work together to make a better industry. So those of you that don't know, I'm Stephanie Mai. I represent the Women Automotive Network. We are a global community of 40,000 from 100 countries. And the mission basically is to inspire, empower, and connect women and their allies together. So without further ado, I would love to introduce these amazing panelists that we have with us today. Yeah, we've got Tanja Kassal, Chief Cybersecurity Governance Engineer of CARIAD, Sabine Scheunert, Managing Director at Central Europe of Dassault Systems, and Mandy Bübinger, Managing Director, Czech Republic and Slovakia of Renault Trucks. Thank you so much. Thank you, ladies. Super. So instead of me talking so much, and obviously a job title is a job title, help me and the audience get to know you a little bit better. Tell me something that isn't on your CV. Tanja, let's start with yourself.
Yes, well, first, let me say good afternoon, everybody. I do hope you're enjoying your time here at the IAA. I certainly am. And one thing that's not on my CV is that I live very close by, 10 minutes by foot. So for me, this is like something that's happening in my front porch.
And what an amazing front garden. City is absolutely incredible. It's my first IAA. Fortunately, it was raining yesterday, but yeah, it's transformed, isn't it? It's amazing.
Yes.
Sabine.
Well, what should I say? I mean, it's the first time for me being at the AIA, not being in the auto industry anymore. And that is something that is radically different.
Amazing. And you're enjoying yourself?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm very busy on stage everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Perfect. Mandy.
So what's not on my CV? I'm really passionate about empowering people, especially females, to really reflect on their strengths, so they are able to unfold their full potential with all the confidence they deserve.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So before we go into the main discussion and sharing of examples, I just want to challenge you all about future-proofing the workforce. You know, look at all the technology around us, the transformations that's going through the industry right now. How can we future-proof a workforce? Is it possible?
Shall I start?
Yeah. You're right next to me.
Okay, so nobody knows the future. Nobody can predict it. So the best thing we can do is have people together with us in the company who kind of are ready to take on the challenge, whatever it looks like. Mm-hmm. So it's more about building a workforce that can evolve with whatever challenges life throws at us than to kind of sit in your room and reflect and think what could be the next challenge and then have people on hold just because you imagine that this is going to be the way that society will evolve.
Right. Never know what's around the corner.
Mm-hmm. I think I would add something. For me, a future-proof workforce is probably not a workforce which is only relying on skills. I think what we will have to push a little bit more is the right mindset. It's a lot about learning and unlearning. As so many things that we learned are not valid anymore. So it's also about unlearning and dropping, yeah, to be able to have room for a reinvention. And I think this is something that we are lacking today in many workforces. We still think it's only about skills. Yeah. I think it's about mindset as well, probably even more important. And this important part is really how can I start in unlearning, because this is something which is not so natural.
Yeah.
But if we really want to reinvent, it's also about starting to unlearn to be able to reinvent.
Okay. Thank you. Nandi, would you have anything to share?
Well, sure. I fully agree. It's a great technology you're all working in. It has everything that makes it sexy in a way, right? It's IT, it's environmental developments, sustainable transport. So just listen to your people and understand what drives them to stay, to work, something that really catches them, and develop that. And for that, you need maybe constant dialogues, find out what people want, engage and talk to you, talk to them, let them talk, expose them to different situations. And then, as you said, unlearn the known processes,
right,
the known ways, and try something new.
Mm-hmm.
Be bold enough to try something new.
Yeah, you're never too old to learn something new, right?
Exactly.
You've got to be uncomfortable. You've got to challenge yourself constantly. Definitely. So even though this show seems super positive and the energy is very much up there, Tanya, I'm going to put you on the spot, because it's not all, rosy and shiny in the automotive industry. There's incredible job cuts across the board. Not that many companies are even hiring. So how can we attract new talent when it's not hiring?
Yeah, thank you for putting me on the spot here. I think we all know that we are under a lot of pressure right now.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the publicity we get is negative, and talents aren't really attracted to negative publicity. So I think that the challenges that we're facing right now require us to think like a salesperson.
Okay.
The first thing that I would do is kind of reframe the automotive industry to be something like a tech company, which we in fact are. I mean, in a car, we have just as many lines of code as in a jet fighter. So traditionally, people see the automotive industry as male-dominated, conservative, very much outdated. But in reality, we have to become more and more of a software company, which, by the way, Cariad is. Right, with all of the challenges that software brings with itself. And it also is an industry that targets on all of the social challenges that we have, like decarbonization, like you can really make a difference right now.
Mm-hmm.
The
younger generation is so interested.
They want a sense of purpose,
mm-hmm.
And that we can really offer, because with, I don't know who today was in a traffic jam on the A9, because some activists glued themselves to the highway to make a statement. So with these things going on, if you can, as an engineer, help decarbonization proceed and environmental benefits, then this could be the place for you to work in.
Okay. So almost repositioning the automotive industry.
Absolutely. Okay. As a tech player and as a place where you can make a difference for society.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would do.
Okay. I'm going to go back to you, Sabina, actually. I heard in a discussion yesterday with a couple of the OEMs who were hiring, and they were specifically talking about attitude rather than skill sets. And you've just mentioned it in your opening. So what is more important when you are hiring? Because I think that's how it's having...
Well, as I said, I mean, I would still say both. I mean, you should not hire someone without the right skill set, in particular when you talk about data and AI and technology and software skills. I mean, you have to have experience. You wouldn't give a surgery to your youngsters, probably, only by intuition and by passion and the right attitude. So my son, who is going to turn 12, would say, I'm capable in doing it. Yeah. So, but I wouldn't somehow trust him in doing that surgery.
Yeah.
So I hope you agree with me if I'm saying that skills are absolutely relevant and skills will stay relevant. But you have to have that mindset and understanding that the world is changing so dramatically fast that it's about that unlearning aspect, which I think we somehow forgot. Yeah. So I don't know whether you know, but I have been for a couple of while in China, and I adopted enormously that population is capable in learning a lifetime, whilst we still in Europe think that after university or your education, you are finished and prepared for your professional career. And that's something that I think we have to bear in mind by recruiting. It's about being an attractive employer, that you have that stickiness, that someone joins you, you have the right purpose, you are there in creating a better world, a better planet, a more individualized individual mobility offering. But at the end, you know, you need to identify those work or those individuals who integrate into your culture, into your workforce, in constantly transforming. And I think this is what we have to do, and we are trying to create programs for that we are really attractive for those, and we are capable in identifying the workforce of the future as well.
Yeah,
because we have seen it in the past. Often, you know, you are hiring a bit of what you know because it's the most comfortable choice. But I think by taking the person who challenged you the most in the interview was often, for me at least, the one who surprised me then also the most.
Okay. Fully. That's super interesting. I think I'm going to fast forward and we come back to the hiring. And actually, whilst we're talking about the skill set side of things, ask you for some real examples. So we've heard a lot of discussions during this IAA about the need to reskill, upskill and share knowledge, especially with the more traditional profiles of experienced employees and this new talent. You know, AI, you cannot escape it. So are there any company programs and initiatives that you can share that's really working with retaining and retraining these adaptive employees?
Well, yes. What I can share is that we have a couple of formats that constantly force people to engage and to talk to each other. And one of them you all know, it's like your constant dialogues with your managers about your performance. But I encourage them not to speak about performance, more on growth opportunities. What do people want? And encourage them to actively listen to your people and there's what they dream of. The second thing we did is we put it in place a year ago, still an ongoing process. It's the co-creation of a local company culture, I would say. And that really enforces engagement from everyone, driving a bit the own company, right? Because you can put so much of your own self, yourself in it. That is really a success story. We are in constant dialogues with our newcomers, finding out what did we do well, what can we improve when it comes to pre-boarding, onboarding, and what can we pass on to our current workforce already. So there's plenty of ideas you can put in place, but what you need is find something, and you can be really creative in that, to be in contact with your employees every day, find out, talk, listen, and then you have the engagement you need. And that gives them the, let's say, psychological safety to speak up, to be brave enough and confident to expose themselves, and that way they learn. If you find a space where you can put them in out of their comfort zone, they learn, and then you are what Sabina just said, the learn something new. It's lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we do have a global project that's called people growth, where we really need to, in a structured way, as a manager, find out what are my, you know, employees need to develop. But it comes back to continuous learning, and that you need to listen for.
Okay. I think the younger generation are quite good speaking out loud and sharing their opinions. And yes, it's all very well organically when we talk about companies exchanging ideas, but can it happen organically, or do we need these specific dedicated reskilling programs and initiatives?
Well, I would say you need both. Yeah. I mean, we are currently facing enormous challenges because when you think about the automotive industry, we're going to talk about huge divisions which will not be in the same task as they're currently in. And AI is going to accelerate that in a magnitude, I think, which is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. So automatically we talk about a specific group of people who have been doing for decades a specific task, and then this task suddenly, I'm not saying disappears, but it changes radically. And I would say you absolutely need both. You need to have a reskilling program for those.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of grab and identify external providers of solutions, you know, even by giving free of charge Udacity licenses, name them. But I think somehow it also starts with an internal training program, because you benefit of so much knowledge. And I have that chance now currently in being in that new company. And I learn that as we are a platform-based company, which is not the case for an automotive OEM or a supplier, we have that knowledge of that decades of workforce, you know, that just left wikis and potentials and simply words and texts and, you know, where I see that huge potential, that that knowledge platform internally is also a very high source of intelligence. And it's not only about searching for an external program or organizing a trainer to come into a company. It's also a little bit that there is a lot of intelligence about reskilling internally, which I think is not yet super exploited. And if you are capable as an HR person or as a top leader, as a CEO, in identifying and giving that variety, then people will open up and will also start in identifying themselves in a new position somewhere else.
Perfect. So I think it's that leading by example. And then Mandy and I were talking, just having that open space, you know, when we have employees who have external hobbies, maybe, that can do something in their extra time and share the knowledge in between employees. Perfect. Sabine, I feel like every company that you've worked at, and I've known you for a long time, you know, you've got this legacy of teamwork and leadership and real company culture. And I think during these times, the identity of a company, it's so important in terms of attracting talent, and when talent has to choose, you know, between the automotive industry and others. How important is company culture? What have you done? What's your magic trick?
Emily, I have to say that I was lucky so far in my professional career, because I was capable in choosing employers with a very strong company culture.
Okay.
And I immersed. Yeah. So I chose them, and God thanks, they also chose me.
Right.
I mean, being in the automotive industry for so many years, I have to say, allowed me, because there is a very strong culture. I mean, the German automotive industry belongs to the strongest one that we have here, right, in our country. And as it's a B2C driven perspective of customer, and you know, the product is so much emotional, automatically you have a strong culture inside such a company. So now also being in a software company, you know, I also find again a very strong culture. And I think it's important that you as an individual, you choose where you want to be, and also how you can fit and what you can bring to the table, but also what you can get back from the table. Right. And it's at least talking for myself, I always tried to keep it in balance, that the energy, and it always costs you a lot of energy in changing roles and changing cultures, that I bring something to the table and the table accept that there's something new coming to the table. Because, you know, when you're entering, you always bring something new. You automatically don't fit immediately, completely, 100%. Right. And I chose, and I was lucky in choosing companies that allowed that I bring something to the table, but I also could take something from the table back into the next role.
Yeah. I think all of us have worked internationally. Do you think it gives you that special edge, maybe? Would you encourage your employees to think outside the box and experience these different cultures?
Yes. I would say definitely it provides you with a background to understand that not everything is always done the same way. Okay, and it will still work, you know? So when you are only in Germany, then you think everybody has to behave in such a way or dress in such a way or think in such a way, and that these values are globally accepted. And they are not, because in other cultures, they see things quite differently. And what you think is very polite, they think is very rude. You think for yourself, well, I'm direct and honest and everybody must really love that. No, they don't. They think you lack politeness.
Yes.
So that really opens your mind to realize that your values are individual to you and they're not universal to everybody. So I think that's really important.
Well, coming back to Sabine's point of giving the space that, you know, you give something and others learn, I like that a lot. And what we experience right now is I have coupled up a few youngsters with some oldies, so really young employees, Gen Z, everyone says they are lazy and whatever. They're not. They really have something to share, and they really have some knowledge where my oldies are, have a lack of knowledge, right? Back to the skills. So we paired them up, gave them a bit of like extra time. And I asked my newbies, my Gen Z employees, to teach something they are really the expert in to my oldies, but think of how does that bring the company a bit further ahead. So we learn from each other. And it's great to see that with all this skepticism, there was from my oldies. So what can this 25-year-old girl teach me being in the company for 25 years, right? They just love each other by now. They're like my dream team. They really bring processes forward where it was stuck for the time being because it has been done 25 years that way. I don't want to change. I'm really successful. What, you know, all that kind of obstacles you have and prejudice. So that is something I really experience right now. And that's the space you need, something to give, something to take. And we will scale it down and see how much it flies and bring the company forward. But I love that. Yes.
Okay. So whether it's structured mentoring or...
And again, to your international, I always try to force the young managers climbing up the career ladder. Benefiting from being abroad is huge in terms of what you gain.
Yeah.
It's not for you only individually. It's a lot of risk you take. It takes courage. It's always out of your comfort zone, I can tell you, even between Germany and France. And I thought it's just more or less next corner. Yeah, it is not. And I would always encourage everyone who has a chance going through the door and doing it if you can in working abroad, in working internationally.
Amazing.
And that's a good point. Working in a being German, working in a company with a French headquarter. But right now with the Czech and Slovak team, I fully agree. It's just around the corner, two directions, totally different. Love it.
Love it. Tanya, sorry. I'm going to ask you again, back to the job cuts. It's a difficult time right now. This is an afternoon where we're talking about female talent and female leadership. And traditionally, you know, they are generally the part-time employees and they're the most effective. The female population is 20% of the workforce. So when it's such a small minority already and, you know, they're the first to leave the industry, how can we support female talent, especially right now when a lot of the companies are going through the cost cutting and they're really focusing on the business needs, not employee resource groups or these, you know, external activities?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is another one of these tough questions, reality check questions. We are experiencing that at Carriott also. And what we try to do is not count work hours, but count the roles that people have and the jobs that they complete. So what you have to try and do is not sideline part-time employees. That's not always women. These are not always women. Also male part-time employees, not sideline them to jobs that are meaningless and have no visibility in the company and require little to no skills. So that is wasting a lot of potential. So one of the things that you have to do is cut your work and your product into chunks that can be handled in a definite amount of time. And if you do that, then you can put people who only work for like 15 hours per week in meaningful positions, as long as they can complete that in that time.
Okay. That's quite a lengthy process, though. It's working in the long term?
It does work, but it requires a lot of front loading. So you have to, as a leader, you have to sit back. You have to know exactly what your department is delivering to the processes internally. And you have to have a notion of how much time and what kind of skill it requires. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, you're only going to get people who work part-time in meaningless, silly jobs. And they will hate that too.
Sabina, you look like you're really wanting to say something right now. So how can we support female talent?
I'm going to say something, and I'm quite already curious in how the males are going to react. But when you asked the question, Stephanie, what came through my mind is eyes open by the choice of your partner. That starts a little bit with us. Yeah, it's females.
Exactly.
But at the end, I mean, we are forced biological reasons, you know, to often take care about as soon as kids are there. And again, it's an easy say, yeah, Augen auf bei der Partnerwahl, we would say in German.
Okay.
But for sure, you cannot know what you saw in the beginning always proves to be then also what happens in the future.
Yeah.
So, and still, and it belongs and it will always belong and somehow is in our DNA. We probably would be the ones saying we take care. We are the ones leaving earlier. We are the ones picking up, you know, in the afternoon. But I have a very precise also understanding that this is something that Europe cannot afford anymore. So we have to bring a lot of more into the game in terms of being able that women are able to work longer. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to work short term or short hours or only 15 or 20 or something. But we have to also to admit that by running a business, we are in specific pressures on quarterly results. There are deadlines to be kept, you know, and it's kind of a machine which is going. And if you just sneak in and you sneak out, you might identify area where it is possible, but there are many, many areas, you know, where you cannot foresee it so much anymore. So you have to be, from a physical standpoint or availability standpoint, more available. And therefore, I pledge that there is more in the society, more in the partnerships, more between the genders, you know, that we have that openness that it cannot be only on the shoulders of women.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for there being so many gentlemen in the audience, because we're talking about future talents, 50% of the workforce eventually, hopefully. Everyone's got a mother or maybe a wife or a colleague. You've got to understand these differences. And I think, you know, you can't have it all. Not everyone wants to be a CEO, but you just want to be supported in your current role. We are seriously running out of time. And I wanted to talk about some of the specific ways that maybe the audience can take away, whether it be personally or some of the managers for their teams. How can we support female talents? Is it mentorship? Is it allyship? You know, what's the key thing you think female talent needs right now?
I would say connections. I would say connectivity is so important. I love being in the office for exactly that reason, because you meet people, you talk to people, you hear about things, you hear about opportunities, somebody can help you with a question you have, you feel supported. And also it's just kind of, for my whole outlook on life, it's more positive. So I would say knowing the right people is really crucial. And by the way, I think it was Coco Chanel who said the most important choice in a woman's life is the choice of her partner.
I heard it there. Thank you. Sabina, what do you think, you know, was the key message that you would give to the audience right now?
Yeah, I think it's pretty critical. I mean, we have seen it. You just need to see it in the ducks. We lost a couple of board members, female board members recently, in particular in the auto industry, whilst there is still enough women talent outside. So I think it starts, if you ask me, on my level with the supervisory board members. You know, they have to, I think, wake up a little bit again. It's not about quota, but it's also about empowering those to come up and not only to have the typical quota lady in the board, but then when it comes to our level of management, just the level below board, it's about a very systematic, constant focus. Yeah, that the numbers are not getting down, and it starts by being focused, having leaders who understand it, that we still need to systematically work on it, because it's not yet natural.
Thank you so much. Mandy, what's your key takeaway for the audience, for themselves and for their employees?
Well, just one sentence to add to what you just said, which I really like, is make your female employee confident to speak up about their expectations. To their partners, to their managers, to themselves. What do they want? What do they expect from the company to be supported? And that can differ from employee to employee. But that's important that we understand. And then we can see, okay, how can we be supportive? Not saying that I can fulfill every wish, but at least I know. And then I can react, right?
Perfect. Thank you so much. So it's about your network, your community, your partner, and your board, but also understanding what you as an individual want.
Thank you for listening to our 5-part Visionary Club special series. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Starting in May, the Visionary Club will enter its next phase. We're launching an exclusive Visionary Club LinkedIn group for all mobility enthusiasts and everyone interested in IAA mobility. As a member, you will receive early access to curated insights, exclusive opportunities to connect with industry experts and decision makers, and a trusted space to exchange ideas across the mobility ecosystem. We invite you to engage in discussions and share your projects, perspectives, and visions for the future of mobility. In addition, we will continue our monthly Visionary Club talk format, featuring leading experts and decision makers driving innovation across the key segments of IAA mobility, including automotive, public transport, cycling, LEV and micromobility, speaking on various aspects of the IAA mobility key topics, such as mobility, technology, sustainability, and smart infrastructure. The Visionary Club Talk will open to all group members and podcast listeners. More information will be available soon on LinkedIn. Stay tuned.